From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
As always, thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show. 24 minutes. It isn't. It's the 24th of January. That's right. It's only 3 minutes past the hour. Thanks for joining me live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and my website.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Got a pretty good show for you today, if I do say so myself. Welcome.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Two terrific guests for you this Thursday. Maria Heller has not been on for ages. I love Maria. I make time to listen to her excellent program as often as I can. Check it out at Maria, that's MERIA.net. The longest running podcast on the internet, that is a fact. Brilliant stuff, always terrifically well briefed. Maria Heller in the second hour with all the top stories from across the pond. Before that, a remarkable man came on this program just over a year and a half ago. His name was Gerard McNamara. He's a blogger, and he's the webmaster of crimesofbritain.com. Is it? Or is it crimesofbritain.net? Let me just tell you now. It's crimesofbritain.com. He's got hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers, and he blogs and writes about British imperialism, the legacy of what they did, and the importance of reporting on what the UK, Britain is doing today. Gerard McNamara joins the programme. This hour, he'll be with me in about 20 minutes' time. There you go. That woke you up, didn't it? Right. Ah, you were daydreaming there late on Thursday afternoon and I came on and started shouting at you. All right, good to be with you. Venezuela. You heard Ollie Barrett there in the news talking about Venezuela because the United States, Donald Trump and the UK Prime Minister Theresa May have decided to recognise Juan Guaido, who's the head of the National Assembly. They've said he is now Venezuela's legitimate leader. Good old Theresa May. Trump, the neocon Zionist puppet, says jump, and Theresa May nearly breaks her neck. Yeah. Nicolas Maduro is the president of Venezuela, democratically elected again last year. He's denounced Trump and blamed external source problems, mischief makers from outside the country for bringing the country to where it is now. Russia is not happy. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, "We consider the attempt to usurp sovereign authority in Venezuela to contradict and violate the basis and principles of international law." Maduro is the legitimate head of state. Yes, he is. It's just another attempt at a coup in Venezuela. They have more coup attempts orchestrated from outside the country than they have rain fall in that place. What is the lamestream media doing? Are they presenting any balance at all? Are they? Do you hold out any hope? Let's hear BBC and Sky. We'll start with Sky. It's Dominic Waghorn, diplomatic editor for Sky. Is Dominic going to present a bit of balance? Is he? Shall we find out? What do you think? 2-1? 16-1 against? What do you think? Here's Dominic Waghorn.
The momentum is built up because we've got this opposition leader, Juan Guaido, who is the head of the National Assembly that Maduro, the president, doesn't recognise. And yesterday, he declared himself the interim leader of Venezuela. And he has been recognised by the Trump administration, by Canada, by Brazil, by a number of Latin American countries. And there's a sense that this is a concerted effort, both within Venezuela and outside, to try and push Maduro out. So we're now set up for a kind of standoff between Guaido, the self-declared president, Maduro, the old president. The question is, where does the military come down? At the moment, the military have been very loyal to Maduro, who has given them powers and privileges and wealth and has kept them on side. Eventually, though, if they feel the tide is turning against Maduro, there will be a tipping point. We haven't reached it yet, but we have seen massive demonstrations, as you're saying, Stuart was out filming yesterday, violence overnight. There's a sense things are moving, and the question is Maduro's regime, are its days...
Regime.
are its days numbered, or is it going to do what it's been doing for the last few years, just clinging on to power, kind of rewriting the book on how leaders cling on to power despite all the terrible damage they're doing to their country?
Rewriting the book. Yeah. Rewriting the book on how leaders hang on to power despite the damage they're doing to their country. Dominic Waghorn. Yeah. Puppet. What about the BBC? They have a reporter called Vladimir Hernandez. He was asked a good question by his presenter to start. So you'll hear the question, then you'll hear Vladimir Hernandez.
This is a country that, on the face of it, shouldn't have these sorts of problems.
Good question. This is a country that, on the face of it, shouldn't have these sorts of problems because it is oil rich, it is natural gas rich, and it's got lots of gold. What the hell is going on? What does Vladimir Hernandez say?
An oil rich nation. It's a country that has more oil reserves, proven oil reserves, than Saudi Arabia. But part of the problem is that historically that oil money probably didn't reach all of the people in the country, and that's part of the reasons why Hugo Chavez almost 20 years ago was elected. The money was not being spent in the right places. Fast forward 19 years later, President Maduro is accused of huge mismanagement. President Maduro is accused of spilfering all this oil money.
Spilfering. New, it's a new word for me. Spilfering. Is it a verb that I never learned in school? So Maduro is accused of spilfering all the oil money. Is he? Is that what's really going on in Venezuela? Maduro is just a fucking bastard and he's keeping all the oil money for himself. Surely, that couldn't be it, right?
Money, and the reasons are there.
The reasons are there.
Evidence probably is there.
The evidence is probably there.
To the country in the last 2 years at least 6-7 times, and you can see malnourishment is rising. Poverty is rising. People on the streets are rising.
People on the streets are rising. Malnourishment is rising. Vladimir Hernandez, Dominic Waghorn, BBC Sky, that's what you'd expect from the two of them. Now, the UK's print media and the UK's broadsheet media is today towing the party line. Guardian, Telegraph and The Independent all saying, yeah, Maduro has screwed everything and he's screwing the people. But back in 2014, it's only 5 years ago, in the beach of time, 'tis but a grain of sand. The Guardian newspaper had a guy in Venezuela called Mark Weisbrot. And Weisbrot, or Weisbro, was telling the truth about Venezuela then. And on the 20th of March 2014, so 5 years and 2 months ago, the Guardian was reporting that everything was fine in Venezuela, despite what John Kerry and Barack Obama were saying at the time. John Kerry, the former US Secretary of State, and Barack Obama, the former president, were lying about the situation in Venezuela. And that was according to Guardian newspaper reporters on the ground. They said it's not just the poor who are abstaining from protesting against Maduro in 2014. It's almost everybody, exempting a few rich areas like Altamira, where small groups of protesters throw rocks and firebombs at the security forces. Writing in March 2014, Mark Weisbrot writes, "I visited Caracas mainly to gather data on the economy, but I came away sceptical of the narrative. The narrative reported daily in the Western media that increasing shortages of basic foods and consumer goods are a serious motivation for the protests. The people who are most inconvenienced by these shortages are, of course, the poor and working classes. But the residents of Los Palos Grandes and Altamira, where I saw real protests happening, they have servants to stand in line for what they need and they have the income and storage space to accumulate some inventory. These people are not hurting. They're doing very well under Maduro. Their income has grown at a healthy pace since the Chavez government got control of the oil industry a decade ago. They get an expensive handout from the government. Anyone with a credit card, which excludes the poor and millions of working people, is entitled to $3,000 per year at a subsidised exchange rate. They can sell the dollars for six times what they paid in what amounts to a multi-billion dollar annual subsidy for the privileged. So the wealthy were doing well under Maduro. He was keeping them happy. up to a point, and the poor of that country were satisfied that he was continuing the reforms of his predecessor, Hugo Chavez. That was The Guardian 5 years ago. John Kerry and Barack Obama and David Cameron were telling you that he was a bastard and people were starving and there was no food, but it was lies. Today, The Guardian is pushing the US narrative and the UK narrative. So what happened? What happened? Well, what the US and her allies were doing to Venezuela during the Obama regime wasn't sufficient to destroy the country and to destroy Nicolas Maduro. This is a fact, not conjecture. I'm telling you the truth now. So what did Donald Trump do then? The Rothschild Zionist neocon whore who came into office a couple of years ago. What did he do? Well, he doubled down on imposing sanctions against Venezuela. This was back in October, November of 2017 when these sanctions began to bite hardest. The Council on Foreign Relations were even moved to say the Round Table Organization. Shannon O'Neill from the Council on Foreign Relations said, what did Shannon say? That the impact will be of these new sanctions, stopping any new direct investment into the country and making any future debt emissions or renegotiation practically impossible. Yeah. So the neocon Zionist puppets who run Donald Trump warned off Venezuela's creditors from meeting the Maduro government to come to an arrangement. So the people that Venezuela owed money to were told, you're not to go and do any deals with him. Don't be taking any oil. Stay away from him. And it was only Russia and China that decided to keep buying Venezuelan bonds. This is true. Even Venezuela's enemies in the press had to admit what was going on. You might not have heard of Andres Abiada. Or Abadia, I should say. It's Andres Abadia, an economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. He said the most recent sanctions have added to the pressure on Maduro, making it practically impossible to secure funding. So the BBC and Sky News is telling you today that the people are starving because Maduro is a fucking gangster. No, he isn't. The country's being starved to death by the United States and the puppets that do the bidding of the United States. The Council on Foreign Relations will tell you. The Financial Times will tell you. US sanctions stopped Venezuela from borrowing or selling bonds into the US financial system, prevented Venezuela from using its oil to do business. Shocking levels of debt then because of that for ordinary people. The US set to break the country in half under Trump. So it's a great question when the BBC man asks the reporter, well, why is it happening in Venezuela? They've got so much. The world's largest oil reserves of natural gas that go on for centuries, and gold that we don't even know the levels of. They tried to kill Nicolas Maduro last year. Do you remember? Using a drone. Who was behind it? CIA, Mossad, who knows? But they failed. Now they're trying to start a revolution in the country again, and they're saying they recognise their own stooge, the so-called opposition leader in the country. And it's all happened so many times before, you would imagine that most people in the world wouldn't fall for it. But that's where you'd imagine wrong. 16 minutes past the hour. Brexit. Airbus has warned that it could move its wing building out of the UK if there is a no-deal Brexit. Tom Enders is the chief executive of Airbus, and he said Airbus will have to make potentially very harmful decisions for the UK in the event of no deal. What a scumbag, eh? Threatening the workforce in the UK by saying if there's no deal, we'll take our wing building elsewhere. It's a disgrace that firms have still not been able to put plans in place for Brexit, blaming the government. Here's Tom Enders, chief executive of Airbus.
And make no mistakes, there are plenty of countries out there who would love to build the wings for Airbus aircraft. In a global economy, the UK no longer has the capability to go it alone. Major aerospace projects are multinational affairs. It is a disgrace that more than 2 years after the result of the 2016 referendum, businesses are still unable to plan properly for the future. And we, along with many of our peers, have repeatedly called for clarity. But we still have no idea what is really going on here.
Tom Enders threatening his own staff in the UK that Airbus is off if plans for a no deal are announced, and more importantly, if a no deal is taken off the table. Wow, Tom Enders. Now, amazingly, only a few hours after Enders' tantrum, his UK vice president, one of his top bosses here, I suppose, a woman called Catherine Bennett, who's the vice president of Airbus UK, she went on Sky News with business reporter Ian King. Ian King asked her a very good question. You will not believe your ears.
Did the UK government put you up to this?
No, the government didn't. I mean, the government had been talking to us and other industry representatives all the time, of course, and we've given them lots of information about the potential impacts. But they did say, could you make sure that you make clear the potential impact of a no deal? And we're happy to do that because no deal is potentially going to be catastrophic for us.
Wow. Did you hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Let's hear it again.
Did the UK government put you up to this?
No, the government didn't. I mean, the government had been talking to us and other industry representatives all the time, of course, and we've given them lots of information about the potential impacts. But they did say, could you make sure that you make clear the potential impact of a no deal? And we're happy to do that because no deal is potentially going to be catastrophic for us.
No but, yeah but, no but, yeah but, no but, yeah but, no but. Did the UK government put Tom Enders up to it, Catherine, to make these threats for UK workers? Did he? No, she said, and then she said.
They did say, could you make sure that you make clear the potential impact of a no deal? And we're happy to do that because no deal is potentially going to be catastrophic for us.
What kind of fuckery is this?
It's fantastic. Tom Enders, the CEO of Airbus, the top man, comes out and says, well, we're going to leave, or we're getting out of here unless you sort out this Brexit thing. His UK top woman has asked, did the government put you up to it? No. And then, well, yeah, they did. Wow, this is your Richie Allen Show, 20 minutes past the hour. Going to be speaking with Gerard McNamara in a couple of minutes' time. Looking forward to that. Finally, for now, though, on Brexit. Members of the cross-party People's Vote campaign have admitted they don't have enough support from MPs to get another EU referendum. The MPs have dropped plans to table an amendment to next week's Commons vote on Theresa May's Brexit deal. Instead, they will throw their weight behind a series of other delaying moves designed to prevent a no-deal Brexit. They were speaking today, Sarah Wollaston and Luciana Berger and Chuka Umunna, and they're all fed up because Jeremy Corbyn hasn't told MPs to back their amendment. Here's Luciana Berger playing the young people card. 2 million people who could not vote 2 years ago can now vote today, so we should let them vote. If it's up to me, I would say tough shit, Paddy. But anyway, Luciana Berger.
Regrettably, the Labour leadership won't commit to an achievable policy. And yet we know that the majority of Labour voters, supporters and members want a final say on any Brexit deal. And yet at a time when Labour should be championing a people's vote, the leadership avoids answering that call. Labour should be clearly setting out a different course, not facilitating a job-destroying Brexit. There are millions of young people in our country that supported the Labour Party at the last general election. Over 2 million of them were under the age of 18 in 2016. They would today now have a vote. And so many of whom I speak to cannot understand why Labour is standing in the way of the younger generation having a say on this, the most pressing issue facing our country since the Second World War, which will affect their futures far more than any of ours.
Yeah, let's have a referendum every 2 years because you never know, in 2 years' time there might be a new generation of youngsters who don't want to be in the European Union, and then 2 years after that, who knows, we could be here till the end of time, eh? This is the Richie Allen Show. It is Thursday. It is January 24th, 2019. This is the Lightning Seeds. When we return, I'll be joined by Gerard McNamara. Don't forget, Maria Heller joins me a bit later on as well. Alrighty. Tweet to the programme at Richie Allen Show. Welcome to it. Lightning Seeds and Lucky You on the Richie Allen Show. It is at 24 and a half minutes past five as we're live. It won't be, of course, when you're catching the podcast of this on iTunes or Spotify a bit later on. Thanks for the tweets. Lots of tweets on Luciana Berger. Lots of tweets on Venezuela and the proclamations of Donald Trump, Theresa May and others. The European Union not going in full yet in terms of the European Union isn't saying what May has said in terms of denouncing Maduro and recognising the head of the National Assembly, of course. Look, we're going to talk a little bit about that with my first guest. Don't forget, a bit later on in the programme, we're live to Arizona to speak with Maria Heller. It's been ages. I tell you what, it's been ages since our first guest was on the programme, and I think his website is a must visit on a regular basis. It was set up back in 2015 to monitor British imperialism historically, but also British imperialism today, and to discuss how the UK government's foreign policy is rooted in that of the British Empire. Very important stuff. So if you want a resource for British involvement in Ireland, in the Middle East, in Yemen, of course, really importantly right now, and elsewhere, it is a brilliant site. It's on Twitter as well. It's at Crimes of Britain. Hundreds of thousands of people follow it on Twitter. And when there's a tweet on Crimes of Britain, it often gets retweeted hundreds and sometimes even thousands of times. It's back in late 2017 that Gerard McNamara, the man behind the site, joined me. Delighted to welcome him back. Gerard, welcome back. How are you?
How you doing, Richie? I'm not too bad.
Thanks for coming on. It's been ages. And there's no excuse, because I did say to you at the time, it'd be lovely to get you back next year, and it never materialised, yeah. But you're a busy man. You've more to be doing than talking to the likes of me, and you tweet daily and you update the website daily. It's brilliant. Let's crack on. We're going to go to the top of the hour. There's a lot to talk about. I want to briefly, and I know you're happy to briefly talk about the UK government's laughable, I should try and be the devil's advocate, but I just can't be, laughable statement that it agrees with the United States and recognises the legitimacy of Juan Guaido, the head of the National Assembly. Your reaction to that, first and foremost, Gerard, I suppose you're not surprised.
Well, no, not at all. I mean, Britain has been, along with the United States, trying to remove the Venezuelan government for some time. I mean, the USA has a very long history of terrorism in Latin America, and that first started with the violent theft of Texas and California from Mexico. So this is centuries old, dominating and ensuring South America is under the thumb of the West. But something that caught my eye actually this month, about a week ago, was that the Bank of England is actually withholding approximately $1.3 billion worth of Venezuelan gold that was put in the Bank of England as a guarantee for a loan from Germany to buy food from Turkey. Even though Venezuela has actually paid back this loan, the Bank of England will not return the gold to Venezuela, which we all know they could use to buy food or do whatever they need to with it.
This is massive news, Gerard. Hang on. This is why I love this programme, because I get educated. I did not know that. Say this again, because our listeners' mouths will be on the floor. Venezuelan gold is currently in the Bank of England, and it shouldn't be there.
That's right. The Venezuelan government has asked for it back. They've repaid the loan. There's no reason for the gold to still be sitting there. Essentially, Britain is probably going to rob this gold. It's $1 billion worth of gold. And the reason this gold is in there is because the Venezuelans used it to loan money from Germany to buy food from Turkey. Uh-huh. And as I said, they've paid it back. But the Bank of England, as per usual, thinks they can rob it.
And tragically, that's an absolute bombshell to me. Thanks for sharing that with us. I presume, and I assume that you will be able to tweet out links where we can follow that. It's at Crimes of Britain, folks, on Twitter, right? So Gerard will put out links later on about this. Tragically on that, and I don't doubt that for a minute, from what I understand, and I talked about this in the monologue, even with the gold, the Trump regime, let's call it a regime because it is, two can play that game, they've convinced most of the rest of the world, except for Russia and China, not to do business with Venezuela, which I understand is one of the main reasons why there have been food shortages and other such problems there. That's the heart of the issue. They can't spend their use their oil, and they can't use the gold they have.
Well, right, that's essentially what it is. The country is under siege and has been under siege for some time. And as we said at the beginning, they've been trying to get rid of President Maduro and before him, Chavez, for some time, even though this man, and we must remember this, was elected with more than two-thirds of the votes. So this is another coup d'etat. This is another overthrowing. And naturally, we see the rich Venezuelans living in the United States rubbing their hands together that they might be able to get back to zapping the wealth of the country while the poor of Venezuela are left with nothing. I mean, Chavez literally dragged Venezuelans out of poverty. And we can't go along with this revisionist history coming from the Venezuelans living in the West.
It's incredible. I was able to, doing a bit of research before today's program, because before my first guest comes on, we do a news roundup. We have audio and we refer to various newspapers. But back in 2014, when Kerry and Obama were telling lies about Venezuela, at the time, the Guardian newspaper had journalists in the country who said it wasn't nearly as bad. In fact, it wasn't anything like as bad as Kerry was saying, and that the rich were doing quite well out of Maduro. The poor understood that the country was under siege and that the protests back in 2014, they weren't really supported at all. This is excellent. Fast forward to 2019, The Guardian, along with all the other newspapers, are towing the US government line and are saying that the situation is catastrophic and it's Maduro's fault. But would you believe it, the Council on Foreign Relations and even the Financial Times and other well-known financial publications were saying only last year that the sanctions put on the country by Trump in late 2017, around about the time when we first spoke, that those sanctions were guaranteed to destroy the country. So the truth is out there, Gerard. If people want to find the real truth about what's happening to Venezuela, if people would open their eyes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, on this note as to why they're destroying Venezuela, Tony Blair, who famously murdered millions in Iraq, he actually told Chavez to abide by the rules. And what he meant by that was, you do what we say, you give us the oil at the price we want it. Chavez told him, go to hell. And that's essentially what it comes down to. They're not playing ball with Britain and the United States, so they're fair game to be destroyed, as we've seen Syria and Libya face the same fate at the hands of these people.
Yeah, I know you want to. We're going to get right into that right now. I want to remind our listeners who we're speaking with. It's Gerard McNamara. I suppose you've got so many hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. I'm sure the website is read by millions of people. In fact, when you came on over a year and a half ago, I did an Alexa, not the stupid machine where you speak to Alexa, but the Alexa internet ranking sites, which ranks websites. Even back then, you were way up there in terms of globally, in terms of getting hits on the website. The website is hugely popular. It's crimesofbritain.com. Gerard McNamara is our guest. If you have a question for him, tweet it now. It's at Richie Allen Show. Let's draw the parallels then with what's happening to Venezuela, the attacks on the country and on its sovereignty, with recent events in Libya and in Syria, which you were all over, Gerard.
Well, on Libya, it was, prior to its destruction in 2011, the most prosperous African nation. It not only was the richest, but it also was a beacon of hope for Africa. Gaddafi was crowned the King of Kings by all of the tribes in Africa. That's how highly he was thought of. So what we have to go into is, because still, you know, we're nearly 10 years on, 9 years on from the destruction of Libya, and nobody talks about how Britain openly worked with terrorists to destroy that country and still does to this day. I mean, when I spoke to you last time, I think it was just after the Manchester Arena bombing. Yeah. And that should have been the biggest scandal of that year in 2017, because the guy that blew himself up had been facilitated to go to Libya and conduct terrorism against that country. His father was a member of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, which Britain backed through the 90s against Muammar Gaddafi. And that is the same group that Salman Abidi was influenced by. Interestingly, Hakim Belhaj, who was the leader of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. Now, this is an Al-Qaeda affiliate group. So their politics, for all your listeners, is very clear. They do not respect the idea of nation states. They want Khalifa, and Britain allied with these people. The only reason these people were able to operate, the only way these people got any power, was because Britain and the United States and France acted as their personal air force, and they dropped more than 10,000 bombs on Libya in the name of so-called freedom to destroy the country and literally hand it into the hands of terrorists like Hakim Belhaj and all of these groups. But we did see with the Manchester Arena bombing, there was a bit of an opening. People started to discuss Britain's role in facilitating terrorism. There was even articles in the mainstream press, even the Daily Mail. But it went off the news within a fortnight and nobody's ever really brought it up since. Interestingly, we've seen in recent years, terrorists have actually gotten off at court in England because it's come out that British intelligence was supporting the very same terror groups they were members of. The most well-known case is that of a guy called Berlin Gildo from Sweden. And it came out in British court that the British intelligence were supplying weapons to the group that he was accused of being a terrorist for. So Britain has a very open relationship with terrorism now. It's not covert, it's not underhand. I mean, if we cast our minds back to 2011, even the BBC were affectionately calling terrorists in Libya rebels. And they were essentially encouraging people in Europe, in Britain, to go to Libya to conduct terrorism. Theresa May was then Home Secretary. She was the person that oversaw and promoted and facilitated people going from Britain to Libya to carry out terrorism. And the same has happened in Syria. Literally, it was a blueprint for Syria.
Can we stay with, just before we talk about Syria, because just to endorse what Gerard is saying, it's very important that you don't think I'm sitting here just nodding along with Gerard. I can't argue with him. Don't forget that only a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, we had a report from the Foreign Affairs Committee, which at that time was headed up by Crispin Blunt MP, who was bizarrely kind of outed from that position. It's now held by an avowed Zionist called Tom Tugendhat. That's another story. I've gotten into that before. But the Foreign Affairs Committee did outstanding work. Eye-opening stuff, really, for me. Never thought you'd get anything as honest from British Parliament. But their report was devastating for David Cameron, their report on the intervention of the UK government in Libya. And some of the wording in that report, you know, erroneous assumptions. You know, Crispin Blunt was basically saying Cameron lied about the necessity to take the UK into intervening in Libya. And yet, for a historian like you, Gerard, and for geopolitical analysts like myself, it's mind-boggling that this stuff can come out in the inquiry, how mendacious this was, how completely corrupt this was. It should have brought down the Cameron government, but it didn't.
True, it should have. He hailed it as liberation and literally stood next to terrorists and supported them. And it should, if it didn't bring down Cameron's government, Theresa May's government should have 100% have been brought down with the Manchester Arena bombing. Because when she was Home Secretary, she facilitated the likes of those people that carry out suicide bombings. But again, it just goes under the radar. And this comes down to the thing is people from Africa, obviously, more so than anywhere else, are seen as expendable. Who really cares about Libya and the destruction of Libya besides a few people? Let's be honest about it. Most people see it as an afterthought. And that's why with the Manchester Arena bombing, you would assume that British people would be outraged that this individual literally was promoted and facilitated by Theresa May. And he comes back and blows himself up.
Can I ask you a question, Gerard, on that? And this isn't loaded. I'm not trying to get you into any trouble at all. But I've always found it. It was David Shaler, who's former MI5, of course. Now, I like David, and he comes on this programme once every now and then. I know that people think David is half-cracked, and people can think what they want. But I like him. I think he's a very smart guy. And David was working in MI5 at the time when MI6 were trying to have Gaddafi assassinated. This is in the mid-90s. And David Shaler told me that Salman Abedi, the man that blew himself up at the arena, his father was none other than Ramadan Abedi, who was known to MI6's agent Tunworth. And he was taking money from MI6 to fund the assassination of Gaddafi. Now, that turns out to be absolutely true, because shortly after Shaler told me that, The Guardian ran a small story on it. That's got to be unbelievably suspicious, that.
Well, this is not even a conspiracy.
No.
This is, as you say, fact. The father of Salman Abedi was a member of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, we mentioned earlier. That was the group he was, and that's an Al-Qaeda affiliate group, and later merged into Islamic State in Libya, many defections. And actually, Hakim Belhaj, who was the leader of that group, was given £500,000 just a few months ago, and they said it was for his mistreatment. Yeah. Really, it was just a bit of hush-up money from the British government. And this month, an arrest warrant is out for Hakim Belhaj for his involvement in terrorism in Libya. So That's a Libyan arrest warrant, not a British arrest warrant. Yeah. You know, he's a mate of theirs. But as you say, it is unreal. It's all out there as fact. You know, imagine what we don't know about Libya, but we know enough to calmly say that Britain is supporting terrorism. And it's not that Britain is making mistakes. Britain knowingly supports terrorism, and it has a hot, cold relationship with these terrorist groups. These terrorist groups, their leaders obviously know what the score is, but their rank and file are so deluded with their ideology that they think Britain and America won't drone strike them or whack them in the likes of Guantanamo once they've done their job in furthering Western interests. And that's proven to be the case. So they have this strange relationship with what people would call Islamist terrorism. And they've had that relationship since the formation of Saudi Arabia. It's not a new phenomenon. We saw the creation of Saudi Arabia. We saw them working with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt against the secularist Nasser. We saw them arming the Mujahideen in the 1980s. We saw them in Bosnia. We saw them up until the so-called War on Terror, where they started to drone strike and lock them up. But now these people have been proven useful again. And they've waged war on Libya. They're waging war on Syria now. They literally control Libya. And with the whole enslavement thing that came out last year, early last year, on the enslavement of black people, it took 6 years before people in the West even paid attention to the fact that black people were being enslaved. We have to remember these terrorist forces in Libya could not operate, could not enslave people, could not human traffic, could not rape, could not murder without the British and the French. There's no two ways about it. Their whole existence, they are literally children of the West.
Why do people not ask questions? I'll give you an example of that. There's been two or three stories in the national press in the last 2 weeks about attacks in Syria by Islamic State militants. Why do you think it is, Gerard, that British men and women are not asking themselves, where are they getting the hardware? Why do you think people don't ask themselves, where are they getting these munitions, these bombs, these tanks? These jeeps and all this stuff. Why do people not just say, how are they getting this stuff in there?
You know, I think people have faced the hard truth. The fact is the British military is working hand in glove with these forces. And again, this is not a conspiracy. We're using their media sources to come to these conclusions. Yeah. We're using the BBC, who put out a picture of British special forces fighting alongside the Free Syrian Army. Literally fighting alongside them. That was on their website 2 years ago. So just by using their forces, it's very clear that who's backing them. Now, what I think for your average British man and woman, it is a hard reality to come to the conclusion that it's not just the government of the day that's doing it. It is the entire British apparatus involved in this, from the civil service to the military to the security services. Now, people can criticize the government and people will say that you should personify all of the crimes onto the government. The government comes and goes. We're talking about people that are in their 20, 30, 40 years behind doors, shuffling papers and organizing this stuff. And I think for your average British man and woman to confront the British military is just a step too far in their eyes. And I think they can live with the contradiction. And okay, there's been some terror attacks in London. There's been 3 or 4 in the last couple of years by these very people that Britain supports overseas. But no one says anything. It was put in the mainstream press. It was in the Daily Mail that Britain was literally supporting LFIG. But people didn't care. You would have assumed people would be outraged, but they weren't at all.
Isn't it interesting you talking about that? And again, the media has been full of stories this week about the threat of the rise of the far right in this country. Now, neither you nor I have any interest or any sympathy with the far right or the far anything. But I know that the far right isn't, you know, it isn't a clear and serious threat to me or anybody else. It's very much a tiny thing. And yet they're warning about the threat of the far right at a time when we've had some of these serious terrorist incidents in the country in the last couple of years. It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy to be talking about this.
Well, the thing is with the British far right, and, you know, they will no doubt commit individual acts, you know, they assassinated their MP, so on and so forth. But with regards to their position on Islam, what I find interesting, and this is why I can never have any truck with them, and I believe that they are truly insincere in their position. As we've just said, you can't talk about this terrorism without mentioning the British security service and military. If you're ignoring the British security services and military, you're going after the junior partner. We need to be talking about who is running these, who is operating them. How, as you said, how can they get the hardware? How can they move about? And that is down to Britain and France. It's not, you can't, you know, obviously these people are criminals and they're scum, but they could not operate without this. We need to talk about the head of the snake, you know, not the tail of the snake.
Yeah, it's very interesting that as an idea, I've been banging my head for years doing programs like this. I do interview conservative people. I suppose over the years I've had one or two what you might call far-right commentators on, and I've repeatedly banged my head saying to them, hang on a second, you know, migration isn't created by people just deciding to leave Syria, Afghanistan, Libya and Iraq. They don't just decide one day, let's head off to the UK, to Greece, to Italy, to Germany, whatever. They're blown out of their homes there. Do you not understand that? And I can't get through to people.
This is the thing, you know. Number one, you can make the assertion that they regard the lives of those people as less, and I think there's some truth in that. And the other thing as well with the British far right is it is full of contradiction. You know, Winston Churchill, universally across the British far right, generally speaking, besides some micro groups, he's held up as the poster boy of these anti-Islamic movements and these groups. Yet he was the very man who installed the House of Saud.
Yeah.
He was the man who actually bankrolled, financed and put them in power. And they will come back and go, but Churchill didn't know what they were like. And Churchill, the best speech to ever show up what Churchill was, he done a speech in the House of Commons in 1921, and he said, we know what the Al Saud clan is. He described them as bloodthirsty. He spoke literally of proto-ISIS type executions for people smoking cigarettes at that period of time. But he said, so long as they remain loyal to Britain, that's fine by us. And this is what it comes down to. And on the topic of Venezuela, Venezuela is not loyal to the British and US, so it has to go. But if it was loyal to the British and the US, no matter what perceived crimes they were committing, that's fine. And that comes down to the relationship with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a British and American proxy. And it's not just an American proxy. The British still train the Saudi Arabian National Guard, who protect the ruling family from a coup. That means they literally control the internal structures of that regime, and they have a hell of a lot of power over it. So we have to, again, talk about the senior partners, which are the British and the Americans in this relationship. There's no point in constantly moaning about the Saudis. The Saudis would not be in position. They would not be able to move an inch without the say-so of the Brits and the Yanks. And even Donald Trump candidly said last year that if it wasn't for us, you'd be gone in 2 weeks. You would fall to the resistance in the region. So it's all well and good people harking on about Saudi Arabia and small terrorist factions. Let's talk about the security services in the West that are facilitating these groups.
Absolutely right. Gerard McNamara is our guest, and it's great to have him back on the programme. We're going till the top of the hour, maybe till about 5 past, with Gerard's permission, because there's some brilliant questions coming in from our listeners. One of them is about Salisbury and Novichok. I can't wait to get your thoughts on that. But before we go to that, I've got to ask you this. It's crimesofbritain.com. If you look for Crimes of Britain on Twitter, there's only one. Follow it. Hundreds of thousands of followers. When Gerard tweets about these issues, as I said, always massive interest. Thousands of retweets and comments and stuff. It's really thought-provoking. I'm amazed you're still on Twitter, to be honest. But that's another story, right? I really am. Now,
well, I did get shut down, but
Temporarily?
Yeah, I lost my Facebook page, just briefly on the topic of censorship, because we're all coming up against this now.
Yeah,
Facebook for me is dead, and I got a new one, but it never sort of recovered. But Twitter, after I think a good 1,000 people or more tweeted in, and they gave me my account back. So it's basically, if you've got a support base, you probably will be all right. But if you don't have a large social media interaction, they can just silence you whenever, and no one will care.
Well, I'm glad your Twitter is still there. I gave up on Facebook because I was banned for 30 days too many times, and I'm very inoffensive. I wasn't having a go at anybody. I was making points about some of this false flag terrorism historically and stuff, and I would get a 30-day ban. I just got fed up with it, so I deleted my personal page. Now, Gerard, is there any truth at all to the memoirs of British spy Mr. Hemphor? Now, some of our listeners won't have a clue, but it is an oft-repeated conspiracy theory. I have a bit of sympathy with it, but then I do have sympathy with conspiracy theories, it must be said. I like a good theory. But a British agent gave conservative Islam, or was instrumental in founding Wahhabism, which is a very conservative, very backwards looking kind of version of Islam, violent and regressive. No better man to ask than you. Is there any evidence to support that?
There is some evidence to suggest that British intelligence, whether or not they created it, that's a whole other debate, but they certainly fostered it. They certainly imposed it on the region. Historically, we know that people from that part of the world opposed and rejected Wahhabism from, I think it was about the late 1700s, Wahhab was about, from that period. Britain took it, imposed it, used it to literally destroy the Ottoman Empire, to wage an internal war in it. But what is interesting, I have got a theory of my own about Wahhabism. And again, it's just a theory, so there's no fact. But I would say that there is a comparison between Wahhabism and extreme Protestantism. And I think because the British Empire came about through that whole Protestant work ethic and rejection of community-based and the idea of individualism, they saw similarities from the mean-spirited, I'm talking about Cromwell's sort of interpretation of Protestantism. They saw some similarities in it and saw how it really could be used to promote sort of the most hyper-capitalist society they could. Because for all of the ills of Catholicism and all of the issues and crimes we could point out on it, it was based on collectivism, whereas Protestantism completely rejects that. And the same with Wahhabism. It's the sort of the most extreme interpretation. You know, if we go back to Cromwell's day, you had nothing in churches. You didn't celebrate Christmas. Churches were bare. And we look at Wahhabism, you know, no graves. You can't, because you're worshipping the dead and all this stuff. So my theory is that they literally saw some similarities with extreme Protestantism with it. They saw how divisive it could be because they used Protestantism to divide and build their empire. That's why it was so successful. And I think going on to Templar, there was also a spy called Shakespeare, with an E at the end. And I'd implore people to research him as well. And he actually was he was a British spy within Ibn Saud's, the first king of Saudi Arabia's inner circle. So there is a fact that British intelligence had penetrated the Wahhabism clan. Let's not forget the second or third most elite family in all of Saudi Arabia is the Wahhab family. And this relationship between the Al Saud family and Wahhab family is basically there. So they always will support the Al Saud family and will back it up through their religious interpretations. Because really, if you literally were to take Wahhabism to the max, they should oppose the Al Saud family. But they don't, obviously, because it's just pure corruption. But interestingly, the whole Salaf Wahhabism movement, they will never condemn Saudi Arabia. They will always clam up when Saudi Arabia is mentioned because they are funded and bankrolled by Saudi Arabia. So my answer is, I believe British intelligence definitely took Wahhabism and pushed it on the region. As for whether they created it or not, it's still just a conspiracy, it's still a theory, but I certainly lean to that direction like yourself.
Good stuff. Gerard McNamara, obviously what's happening in Yemen is beyond a disgrace. There are no words to describe it. Our audience is very much aware of what's happening there because we've had guests on talking about it. Gerard is writing about it on crimesofbritain.com and on the Crimes of Britain Twitter handle. I've just tweeted out a link to the website in case you haven't come across it before. So I want, in the few minutes we have left, with your permission, if it's okay, to talk about, for me, and I've been working in mainstream media, nationally, commercially, overseas for years, the greatest nonsense I've ever seen in my life is the Skripal Novichok poisoning story, Salisbury, last March, I think it was. We found out only a few days ago, you'll be aware of this, Gerard, that when the Skripals collapsed in a faint on a bench near the restaurant they'd eaten in Salisbury, wouldn't you believe it, the first person to come across them, the very first, was not only a British Army nurse, but the head British Army nurse, and a colonel indeed. What do you make of that story, Gerard?
The whole, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't followed it that closely, but the whole thing was very strange. And I actually probably got most of my information off the BBC, seeing on the headlines. And as I say, I'm not well versed in it. It does stink, as you say. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but just it wasn't very well done. If we go down your avenue of assuming it is literally done by British intelligence, but it stinks. I have no more to say on it because I don't like to comment on stuff I'm not well versed in.
Fair enough. It's a crazy thing. It does kind of segue out of or into back into Syria and claims that that the Assad government had authorised the use of chemical weapons. And, you know, we've talked to a lot of people on this programme about this supposedly benevolent volunteer group, the White Helmets. But going back 3 years ago, I've had people on this programme telling me the White Helmets are not all they crack up to be at all, that they're hell-bent on separating Syria right down the middle. So I see the Novichok nonsense, without asking you any more questions about it, to be fair to
just
you.
Just on the White Helmets.
Yeah.
All we need to say about this, who created the White Helmets? James Lemessurier, a former British Army officer.
Yeah.
No more needs to be said. You know, this is again another example of British collusion with terrorism. It's not a conspiracy on the White Helmets. The evidence is out there. You know, people need to start looking at facts. We don't need to go into grand stuff all the time. The fact is there. It was set up by the British, 100 million. The British were the biggest contributors to it. And the guy who actually formed it was given an OBE for saving lives, when it was the complete opposite. This force, we've seen the videos, we've all seen them working with terrorist groups in Syria. There's no two ways about it.
And at the time, well, not at that time, but last year, around about the time of the Novichok nonsense, you had claims that Assad had deployed chemical weapons there. Again, you must be as horrified as I am that UK-based journalists, especially the more experienced ones, don't have the courage within their broadcast to say, hang on a second, what in the name of Jesus would Assad have to gain by doing that? Why would he do it? The Russians have helped him push these jihadists back further and further away from the big cities. They're doing well. Why would he deploy these weapons? I suppose, as we come to a close today, Gerard, we talked about Venezuela, we talked about Libya, what happened in Iraq. Syria seems to be standing firm, and the Assad government seems to be standing firm. Are you optimistic then, looking ahead to 2019, this year and next year?
No, not really.
Why?
To be honest, Syria is destroyed. It's, as you say, it's withheld, and the Assad government is still there. But let's not forget, the country is destroyed. They're trying to still balkanize the country. But, you know, obviously, Syria not falling is a victory in itself. But we're about to lose another country, Venezuela. You know, Syria is still there. It's still a living country. But look what it's been through. Look at how the destruction that has come down on that country. We have to I'm a cynic, to be honest with you. The possible coming war on China in the next decade. We already see them doing soft power aggression against China. So I think we should all be very cynical. I think we shouldn't take our eye off the ball for 1 second or put any faith in the West. I think China is the next big country to go.
What about China and Western powers in a proxy war taking place in African countries? What do you think?
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, people constantly go on and say that China is exploiting Africa, right? Now, it's a business relationship. Is it exploitive? Possibly so. But it's not the relationship Britain and France have with Africa, where they are literally looting the wealth from that country still to this day. More than $1 trillion still sits on the London Stock Exchange of African resources. Now, the British and the French are very worried about the Chinese moving into Africa because their economies in the West are being kept afloat by the looting and theft of African resources. You know, even in Algeria, the French are trying to cozy up to the government there and are saying, you know, we might return some artifacts that we've looted. Again, the cynic in me says the British and the French are trying to be less racist in their position towards Africa to counter Chinese investment and Chinese business there. Ultimately, you have to look at who's the greater evil. Now, people can go on about Chinese issues in Africa, but they're nowhere near that of British and French exploitation. So you need to kick the British and the French out of Africa first.
Before you do anything else.
Exactly, because, you know, France in Africa, still to this day, there's two currencies, two different francs in Francophone Africa. France to this day sets the value of those currencies for African nations that were former French colonies. So they're still French colonies, they're neo-colonies. France dictates what their currency value is worth. They're not free. So ultimately, people should be, in my opinion, allying to China in Africa because it counters Western looting of Africa, and it will ultimately be fairer. You know, is it a perfect situation? No, but we're not idealists. We've got to go with the best we can in this world, and the British and French have got to be booted out of there.
I'd like to ask you to do me a favour. Let's try and put something in stone here, because the last time you were on, we said, come back soon, and you didn't. So let's, I've been asked to ask you, this is genuine, would you come on and talk about the famine, the Irish famine, as a topic some time in the very near future? I'd love for you to
educate.
Because I know what you've been writing about the Irish situation and the, you know, the foundation of the Irish state, but going back before that, and I've read you on the famine. I'd love to have you on to talk about the famine and what really went on and what was going on at that time historically. So if I was to give you a shout in 4 to 6 weeks' time, we'll make some time, Gerard, and you'll come back on. I'd love to have you on to do that.
Definitely. We'll see you then.
Oh, that's marvellous. Crimesofbritain.com. Gerard McNamara, top man, folks. And follow him on Twitter if you haven't. It's Crimes of Britain on Twitter. Thanks for your time today, Gerard. Loved having you back, mate. Cheers.
Thanks, Richie. Bye.
It was an honour. Bye for now. Gerard McNamara live on the Richie Allen Show for Thursday, January 24th, 2019. Top man, crimesofbritain.com. Interesting, isn't it, about British intelligence and the imposition of Salafism, Wahhabism, the more extreme, the more conservative ideology of Islam, and why they would have done that, and what was the payoff for doing that. And Mr. Hemphor, 18th century British spy. Fascinating stuff. All of this is covered on Gerard's website. Do check it out. As I said, if you haven't checked it out before. Shall we have a look at the tweets, shall we? There's been a lot of tweets. A lot of tweets about the White Helmet Group. Thank you. Maria Heller has been tweeting. Maria will be with me in about 5 minutes' time, live from Arizona, just coming off her own programme. Great stuff there. David Stanford tweets, I'm surprised, Richie, in Salisbury, it wasn't Florence Nightingale who just happened to be there for the Skripals. Yeah. What a story, eh? What was her name? I mentioned it yesterday. Colonel Alison something or other, wasn't it? The head of British nursing in the, excuse me, the head of nursing in the British Army, Colonel no less, happened to be walking past the bench when Sergei and Yulia were collapsing under the dose of Novichok. Faisal tweets, in Africa, they take for granted that Gaddafi was a socialist leader. Funny how the Western media never mentions that, and hardly anybody knows about that. That's true. Very few people in this country would have any idea in terms of how Gaddafi was regarded in his country. Paul Sweeney tweets, Cromwell was also funded by Jewish financiers. Thanks for your tweet, Paul. Hi to Moira. Hi to Annabelle. Hi to Sean. Loads of tweets that I missed there. I was absolutely wrapped up in what Gerard was saying. Hi to Dean Smith. Je suis français, says Dean. Let me put a question to you, dear listener. In the news at the top of the hour, Ollie Barrett from FSN said that some yellow vest people, some of the French gilets jaunes, some of the top men and women are planning on standing in French elections in the very near future. Is that not a cause for concern, eh? Eh? I've kept my powder dry on the French yellow vest protests. I've had guests who've come on, very good, very smart people, smarter than me, Garrido Colmon, Tony Gosling, people I look up to and always will. And they're very impressed with the Yellow Vest movement. And I'm kind of reserving judgment. Because the Yellow Vest movement stinks of the Arab Spring to me. I don't know why, but it just does. I really get this feeling that, you know, everybody's putting a Yellow Vest on and they're all getting involved and, you know, it looked like it started off as a grassroots movement, people totally pissed off of the establishment. But now we have leaders and we have people standing for office. It smacks of Soros, doesn't it? I know politically it doesn't make an awful lot of sense, but it smacks of Soros to me. It does. Hi to Susan. Yeah. Tweet me on that. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, at Richie Allen Show. Thanks to Chris Morell. Thanks, Chris, for tweeting me a link to the story about the first responder to the Skripals. What was her name again? I'm just bringing it up now. There's a nice picture of her there in uniform. Colonel Alison McCourt. That's right, Chris. Colonel Alison McCourt. There's a lovely picture of her outside 10 Downing Street. The British Army's most senior nurse just happened to be there. As the Skripals were stricken. Nothing to see here, please disperse. Only RT going with the story. I think The Guardian might have published something on it. Didn't get much from the rest of the UK media. So Maria will come on. Let's talk a bit of Trump with Maria. The US government shutdown. What the hell does that mean? Eh? We know Maria loves to have a go at Trump. So we'll get into that, but we'll look at one or two health stories which have made the news today and yesterday as well. I'm going to get a roundup of the big stories in the US independent media. Maybe some stories that I haven't been covering. Maybe stories that I've been neglecting here. Right, okay. Back to the 1980s then. With a bit of Terence Trent D'Arby on your Richie Allen Show. Thursday's show. Going to do one tomorrow as well, boy. Like a bandit stealing time underneath. As he crashes the music, I'm doing a show tomorrow. Tell you more about that later. Terence Trent D'Arby and Wishing Well on the Richie Allen Show. It's approaching 8 minutes past the hour right now. Thursday's programme, going to be with you tomorrow, round about 2 p.m. UK time. I'll tell you more about that overnight. I think it'll be two anyway, in lieu of Monday. All right. Right, without further ado, let's welcome back to the programme an amazing woman presents a fantastic and unmissable radio show. It is the oldest show, the oldest podcast on the internet. That's actually true. When she told me that some years ago, I didn't want to believe her, but it's actually the truth. It's a wonderful thing to be able to say, truly independent. You can catch it, find out all you need to know about it by going to Maria, that's M-E-R-I-A .net, if you haven't before, that is. Maria, M-E-R-I-A .net. Live from Arizona, let's welcome back to the program for the first time this year to our great friend and colleague, Maria Heller. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
Yeah, and Happy New Year to you too. It's great to have you back on the program. There's a lot to talk about. Planet of the Apes. I can't think of you or come across you on Twitter without thinking of Planet of the Apes, because that's your catchphrase. You put that into my head some time ago. How have things been first before we delve into the news?
I can honestly tell you that I've never worked this hard in my life. Good. After 19 and a half years of doing this podcast, I haven't taken one day off in the past 3 years.
You make me ashamed. I have taken time off in the past few years. So, yeah, it is crazy. I don't know whether we're approaching something really good or something really negative, because I keep hearing about, as time goes on, people keep telling me, it's brilliant, Richie. I listen to Maria Heller, it might be. I listen to somebody else, it might be. And I'm finding more and more people are tuning in and listening in. We're on the verge of great change. I'm not a pessimist. I'm not negative by nature, but I don't see it, to be honest. What do you see?
Well, you know, hope springs eternal. Look, here's the thing. I keep telling people, you know, there's an old saying, an expression that says you have to go through hell to get to heaven.
Yeah.
We're going through hell phase right now. And believe me, we haven't hit rock bottom yet.
It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Absolutely. Look at the entire world. Okay. The entire world is starting to revolt. People are starting to wake up. They're starting to protest. Governments are oppressing their people, oppressing their protests, shutting people down. Here in America, they can arrest you with no charge, hold you, you know, as long as they want. People are just not paying attention to this fascism. It's like a global fascism that's happening, with every dictator around the planet getting more and more fascistic, especially Trump.
Tell us about arresting without charge. Did that come in under W. Bush? Was that a Patriot Act thing, Maria?
Well, this is not even a Patriot Act thing. This is, you know, we have a president who's an open racist. It's evident to the entire world with his Muslim ban that he hates Muslims. He hates everybody, basically. Just a few weeks ago, I had a story that no one seemed to cover about a woman who happens to be a Muslim. She's American born. She's a journalist. Her name is Marzia Hashimi. She was arrested with no charge, held by the feds with no charge for 10 days. They tore her headscarf off her. They basically tortured her. And if it wasn't for the few people that actually were aware of this woman's plight, she would not have been released, which she was just recently released.
Is she the press TV journalist, Maria? She's a press TV lady. Is that right?
I'm not sure if it was press TV. I don't have that article in front of me. I want to say maybe, I don't know, maybe Al Jazeera. Yeah. I'm not sure. But the bottom line is she's an American. She's American-born. She's an American journalist. And because she's a Muslim, I assume, is part of the reason she was held. And what people don't understand, and yes, you're right, the Patriot Act pretty much got rid of all our rights in this country. If, you know, if I didn't make it known and some other people make it known and people didn't make phone calls, she would still be rotting in jail.
It's a disgrace, that story. Yeah, I came across it through you on Twitter. And I suppose it's indicative of the times we're in. It doesn't matter which organization she was representing. She's a journalist. She's American. Right. But the fact that she can be taken, held like that, treated like that, and there doesn't seem to be any recourse for her in terms of taking a case against those who imprisoned her. Every American should be terrified of that, whether you're black, white, blue, pink or green. It's terrible.
Right, it doesn't matter. You know, this past week I did a Facebook Live with my daughter, and they kept kicking it back and giving my son-in-law, who was running the live, problems because he was posting my website in the verbiage on the bottom of the screen. And Facebook has classified my website, maria.net, dangerous.
Dangerous. There's nothing dangerous about it. Well, not to me or to anybody listening to this program. Maybe to the people behind some of these schemes that you expose, maybe. It's maybe dangerous to them. One of the things I love about you, I've known you for years, and I can always be the devil's advocate with you, and you've got thicker skin than anybody. So I'm going to get stuck into you. I'm going to try and needle you. I'm going to try and rattle you, Maria Hill.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me go with you. Look.
God, I just screamed an hour and a half worth of news.
This is why I think I might have you. I think you might just be ready to explode.
Look,
you might be. There are people who listen to this, and they do love listening to you, but they criticise you then when I put this on YouTube, and they criticise you very nicely, very constructively. They say, look, I hear Maria, but don't think that everybody who's worried about immigration is just a kind of a rednecked, ugly racist. We should be worried about what, you know, unskilled migrants coming into cities do to the people that are already there in terms of their job prospects and their working conditions. Now, I know you long enough to know that you know this, but there are people who listen to you sometimes and they don't hear that from you, and they think, we're not all bloody racists when we express a bit of concern about immigration. Go ahead.
Well, listen, I've done shows with immigration lawyers all through the years. You know, there are simple solutions to our immigration problem. But for the people that are worried about, you know, immigrants taking their job, the immigration that really hurts American jobs is the legal immigration, not the illegal. The legal immigration, like the people that you know, come in and take white collar jobs, they're the ones taking the good paying jobs. You know, when they kicked out the Mexicans here in especially in Arizona, you can't get anybody to do those jobs. You know, just in my small town of 15,000 people, when Joe Arpaio, a convicted felon who was sheriff, did an illegal deportation of the Mexicans here, three construction businesses immediately went broke and three restaurants closed. So, you know, when people say they're taking our jobs, they're not jobs that Americans want.
It's a really it's a really good answer, this. And I'm not patronizing you, and I'm not, you know, kissing up to you. It's a really good answer. So when they come in from Central America and South America, they want jobs on farms. They want jobs in vineyards. They want jobs like that. They're not taking white collar jobs. So you're saying immigration has hurt America, but not in the way that people understand.
No, people don't understand that the legal immigration is what's taking our good jobs. Okay. And I'm not saying people shouldn't come here legally, but when we, the United States, destroys their countries through economic hitmen, economic sanctions, which are an act of war, blow up their countries. You look at Trump now looking to invade Venezuela. Where do they expect these people to go when we've destroyed everything they need to stay alive?
Absolutely. And let's talk about that in a second. The white-collar jobs that legal migrants are taking, is it because they're prepared to work for less wages?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And Trump knows this, right, Trump? Right. Of course.
I have friends that work in Silicon Valley that made really good livings, and then they had to train the legal immigrants coming in to take their jobs for less pay.
Why don't we hear about this in the media in the U.S.?
Well, the media is owned by six corporations that run everything else, so they're not going to cover it.
Yeah, because they love talking about the immigrants coming in the caravans because it sells, right? It's brilliant.
But the truth of the matter is there are less people coming into the United States over the past 10 years than ever before. You know, nobody's talking about the fact there are 1 million Americans living illegally in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough, yeah. This is so important, you know, yeah.
Listen, this is a very deep issue. I would suggest everybody go over to Amnesty International and get educated on immigration and why it happens. We just recently had the Women's Day March in America. I actually went to the one in my town, which I was surprised they even had one because I live in an extremely Republican state. And there are lawyers, actual lawyers in Tucson, that are giving free legal counsel to a lot of people trying to get in this country legally and illegally. So there was a white woman who was crying on the stage because her son-in-law was deported, even though he was legally married to her daughter, who's an American citizen, and she lost the daughter and her grandchildren. They decided to move to Mexico with the son-in-law. I mean, this is breaking up families. It's tearing up families. And this is nothing new, Richie. This immigration problem has been a problem for decades in America, and not a Democrat or Republican has done anything to fix it.
Well, they don't want to, because while it endures as you've described it, it becomes a wonderful political and social football. So it becomes
Absolutely. Everybody's
focus. So while you're focusing on the migrant caravan, and you've brilliantly explained to me that the media doesn't talk about the legal white-collar migration, which has a big impact on American citizens. So the media just looks at the caravans and it looks at Muslims and all of that. Everybody's focused on that. It's wonderful theatre. You have the right versus the left and all of that. While we're all focused on that, Trump is destroying countries with economic sanctions. He's destroying countries by supporting lunatic radicalist jihadists to destroy those countries physically and economically, obviously creating a migrant problem. But nobody's talking about that. We're just talking about building walls. It's a lunatic asylum.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, you look at it and who do we take our cues from? You know, we take our cues from Israel. And you look at what Israel has done as an apartheid state, a genocidal state. You know, Trump made it clear that he's under the thumb of Israel when he moved his embassy to Jerusalem. You look at Israel, gets away with it. And these are the kind of people, you know, Duterte, you know, another psychopath, Kim Jong-un. These are the people that Trump respects. And he tosses his cookies in with them. And right now, you know, the big story that people really should be talking about is the fact that Russia and China both have warned the United States against taking any aggressive action in Venezuela.
Now, here's a question for you. Mutual friend of ours, somebody we respect, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, has been writing about this today. And Paul writes an excellent article on the real story of Venezuela and what's been happening to the country. You know, Marie, I spoke about this. You've been speaking about it in your program today. I did my monologue on this today. Trump doubled down on sanctions on the country back in 2017, designed to destroy the country. Sanctions that even the Council on Foreign Relations, a neocon Zionist group, the Council on Foreign Relations even said would destroy the company. The United States has prevented Venezuela doing business with anybody. This is why you've got food shortages. We know all this, right? Paul Craig Roberts, brilliant article. But Paul is lamenting the fact that he believes that the Chinese and Russian condemnation is basically mealy-mouthed. In other words, it doesn't come with the sort of protection that maybe Syria got. What are Russia going to do, really, other than just say the United States shouldn't do it? Are they really going to come and help out Venezuela in some way? What do you think?
Well, They want to, obviously, their goal is to destroy the United States. They have the perfect administration in place right now. Trump has totally dismantled the entire country. People accused Obama of starting a race war, but we've got that race war now under Trump. So I really don't know. What I do know is we have no business. Trump thinks he can just do whatever he wants or send the military, create a military situation in Venezuela, which is against the law. The military's only here against countries that actually attack us, but he knows absolutely nothing about his job or the world or anything, to tell you the truth. But, you know, a few months ago, I had reported on my show, which didn't get any coverage in the news here in America, that Trump actually wanted to have a military coup in Venezuela and couldn't understand why he couldn't do it. So he's still working on that. I say if anybody needs a military coup right now, it's the United States.
So these are extraordinary times when you have the UK government, the US government declaring war on a country that has never threatened, let alone, it hasn't obviously threatened the West, it hasn't threatened the UK or the US, it hasn't threatened any of its neighbors.
Look, when all those Latin American countries got together and started their own bank and refused the US dollar, that's when the problems began. And I knew it was just a matter of time before we went after that bloc.
And Chavez was assassinated at that time, right?
Pretty much so. So, yeah. Listen, people always say, why do they hate us here in America? Because Americans have no idea that it's always been our foreign policy. That's why they hate us. We interfere in every other country's elections. We interfere in their economics. We always have our fingers everywhere. And how many coups have we performed around the world? And never to the benefit of the people on the ground.
Yeah, we had one of Macron's, well, when I say we, the United States had one of Macron's opponents charged with phony allegations of rape. I can't remember the guy's name now. It was on my tongue a second ago. This is late in the day, didn't they? One of the key opponents to Emmanuel Macron being elected as president of France was trumped up on phony rape charges in order to skew his campaign, and then.
Think about Russia and when Putin poisoned his competition or arrest his competition.
And you know what? You're not your opponents, but people who would take a different point of view than you. And
you're welcome to it.
No, absolutely. But people who are glad that Russia is doing the right thing in Syria. And I'm one of them. I've always said, thank God that the Russians have decided in their own interest, of course, that they're going to protect the sovereignty of Syria to the best of their ability. People can't ignore that what Maria Heller said there is just right. Vladimir Putin is a crook. He's a crook. He's a gangster. He's doing the right thing in Syria. By standing up for Venezuela, he's doing the right thing. But Putin is not one of the good guys. Don't think or imagine for a minute that he is.
I can't tell you any leader in any country that I would think is a good guy right now.
Absolutely. Let me read a few tweets. There's so many of them. Chris tweets, Richie and Maria, remember the summit with Putin? When asked about the Syrian war, the first word out of Trump's mouth was Israel. On Venezuela, presume our Theresa May's government is backing the coup. Well, they are, definitely, Chris. They've endorsed it today. And Corbyn vilified for backing Maduro. Has Jeremy Corbyn spoken out today about Venezuela? I'm not. He might have done. I haven't seen anything. If anybody can tweet out some link to Corbyn giving some opinion on Venezuela, I would be very interested in reading that. Patricia Braunschweiler, friend of ours, friend of Maria's. The truth is that the racist attitude of Trump has allowed the racists hiding under rocks come proudly out. Actually, anyone who is truly despicable has been given a platform, in my opinion.
That's true.
She's right, but I would probably slightly disagree with Patricia there. I think it's a good thing. You see, I don't want to spend the rest of my life calling people racist. If people genuinely have negative feelings about other people based on their ethnicity and they have genuine hostility for them, I don't want to bury those people underground. I don't want to send them off to exile. I don't want to put them in prison. I'd rather talk to them and find out why do you think like that rather than ban them
Have you tried talking to them?
I have. I've interviewed them all and tied them up in knots, you know.
It's like trying to argue with a Jehovah's Witness at your door. You're never going to win.
No, but you see, you know, this is, maybe somebody more experienced than me, as you are, might take a little bit out. You might take a little bit out of what I'm going to say. Maybe it's not about winning. Maybe it's about coexisting. I know this sounds like liberal crap, this, but maybe we have to accept that there are people on the planet who will feel negatively towards people because of their sexual orientation, because of the way they look. And we can't call them animals and just shut them down. We can't do that. That's just my opinion. And I'm not trying to be Mother Teresa here now. I can fight with anybody, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe that's what the system wants us to do. Kill each other over racial
politics. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we're all busy killing each other. They're busy robbing us all blind.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I had a story today, as amazing as it is, that 26 people, not corporations, not groups, 26 human beings have more wealth than 50% of the world's population.
Here's one
so
for you.
So while those people are making themselves richer and getting angry over the possibility they might actually have to pay their fair share of taxes, they keep us busy fighting each other with these hot button issues. You know, Facebook to me is just there to whip up people's emotions and mind control one group against the other. And it's sad to see how weak-minded people are to fall into that crap continuously. We never seem to take the fight where it belongs.
Absolutely right. While we're talking, a listener sent me an email, and the listener is a big follower of Jeff Berwick and people like Jeff. Jeff's been on with me a few times before. Jeff's an anarcho-capitalist. So you'll probably guess what the listener is saying. Fed up of people complaining about people having wealth. Maybe they got all their wealth because they had brains and because they worked harder than the likes of Richie Allen and Maria Heller. There you are.
Well, I don't have any wealth, so I can't tell you. I do know I have a lot of brain. But if we look at, we have a president who has no brain. And the only way he got his wealth was his father giving him $413 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, if my father gave me $413 million, I guess then he would consider me smart.
And Trump was bailed out how many times by the likes of J.P. Morgan and other Rothschild-controlled institutions?
Russia bailed him out. The Saudis bailed him out. You know, when people talk about it, it's not just Russia that helped put him in office. The Israelis helped put him in office, and especially the Saudis. You know, they bailed him out from his bankruptcy, buying his useless yacht. You know, he brags about how many buildings and how many millions of dollars they bought of his property. So, you know, Trump has proven that he could never run a business. Who actually owns a casino and goes broke? Okay. Everything about him, his organization's been shut down. His charity's shut down. He could never run a charity again. His university was proven to be bogus. They had to pay millions of dollars back to people. I'm sure his father at some point got really sick and tired of giving him money that he just kept losing.
He could. We've a great saying in Ireland, God's country. And that saying is, he couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery. Piss up meaning a drinking session. I know you know what it means, a drinking session.
Right. Well, absolutely. Just say he couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, bailed out so many times, leveraged. We know. Look, I'm going to throw the name Michael Moore in there. And half of my, because you and I have conservative listeners and we have, I suppose, more socialist minded listeners. And I do have a healthy conservative listenership. They don't know half the time whether I'm conservative or whether I'm not. Of course I'm not. I'm neither. But they listen anyway, fair play to them. And when I mention Michael Moore, they'll melt down. But I watched, Caroline and myself watched Michael Moore's most recent film, Fahrenheit 11/9. And
I just saw it myself.
Yes,
I thought it was excellent.
I thought it was excellent. And I fell out with Moore years ago because, as a proper journalist, as you are, by the way, He committed suicide when he stitched up Charlton Heston when he made Bowling for Columbine. He tried to make it look in his film that when the two crazy lads went and shot up the high school at Columbine. Moore tried to make it look like the NRA rocked up the following week in that area, shouting and screaming and waving their guns. Now, I don't like the NRA, but Moore was lying. That didn't happen. It had happened prior to the shooting. Now, as a journalist, you live and die by your honesty and your integrity. And I wrote letters to Moore at the time, emails, everything, saying you're a disgrace. I won't be watching you again. However, Fahrenheit 11.9 is very good, and it's very muted in terms of he's kind of kept the silliness out of it. One part of it, which is, you just cannot ignore, Donald Trump is a sex fiend. Moore has all but, in fact, he has basically called him a pederast in the film. He's gone as far as saying, look, and he's shown these really uncomfortable clips of Trump. Some of them I didn't even see. All I can conclude is that Trump is the most leveraged, he's the most compromised politician on planet Earth, that the elites have more dirt on Trump than they do on Tony Blair and W. Bush combined. Therefore, he's a perfect puppet, Maria.
Absolutely. No argument out of me. And listen, I'm no great fan of Michael Moore. And I do enjoy some of his movies. Some of them, you know, I sit there yelling at the TV screen. But even a broken clock is right twice a day. And I think Fahrenheit 11.9 was probably one of the better movies he's ever made.
It is. Those scenes where Trump is shown with a very young Ivanka Trump are... Look, I'm not going to be a snowflake, because I'm not. You know, I can watch anything. They're creepy in the extreme.
Yes, they are. Listen, he has that lawsuit against him from that 13-year-old girl at the time that he raped on Orgy Island with his friend Jeff Epstein. And people always argue with me, you know, there's so many people that still defend him and see him as the Messiah, which is crazy. I just tell them, you can Google it. The whole lawsuit's online.
Now, to be fair to Trump, and we should be, you and I, no matter what we think of him and the neocon Zionist whoremongers that put him in power, let's be fair to him. It's a lawsuit. He's entitled to be considered innocent until he's proven guilty. And it's only true, the girl's claims at the moment. It has yet to be proven. So it's wrong of me.
You could also read his divorce records with Ivana, where he physically abused her and raped her. Since that time, he must have paid her off enough to try to say she was exaggerating, but it's still in there. And I'll tell you what, when I read that passage as a woman, I was sick to my stomach.
She alleges that when, at one time, at least at one time, when she said no, she didn't want to have sex that particular evening, that he basically turned into a lunatic and forced her to have sex.
Oh, no, the story's much deeper.
Yeah.
Because she was using, as most rich people do, plastic surgeons, and he was losing his hair. So she recommended her plastic surgeon, and he went in for what they call a scalp reduction, which I never even knew existed, Richie.
Me neither.
So what they do is they kind of cut your head and stretch the hair part to where it'll meet. So your head will actually be growing hair in the right place.
Right, okay.
But he had no idea it would be so painful. So when he came home, he was in excruciating pain from it, and he accused her and blamed her for recommending her doctor because he was in pain, and he grabbed her by her hair and said he was going to rip her hair out of her head and give her some pain, and forcibly raped her at the same time. Rape is an act of humiliation and violence. Make no mistake about it. It's an extremely sickening story, and yet his children are still all over him, thinking he's wonderful, knowing what he did to their mother. So this is a family of reptiles, as far as I can see. None of them have any human quality. If anybody can look at Trump's eyes and not see a reptilian, I'm shocked. And these are the kind of animals that we now have in office. And we have a bunch of doomsday freaks, from Mike Pence to Mike Pompeo,
Lindsey Graham.
I think their doomsday cult and beliefs is part of why they want to start this war in Venezuela.
And there will be Trump supporters listening to this, and they'll be losing their collective shit.
Hey, I don't care.
No, I know you don't. Listen, I'm not saying that for your benefit. I know you don't. But I'm speaking directly to the Trump supporter who's losing his or her mind now. Calm down a second. And let me tell you that I believe, right, nothing that Maria said there is anything other than horrendous. I'm not trying to sanitize it in any way, but I'm going to say that I believe the Clinton crime cartel is worse. And I think...
Hey, I've covered the Clintons all through the years. So, yeah, I've covered them in depth, all their crimes, all their murders, his whoring around on Orgy Island, his illegitimate son. But right now, there's no point in talking about the Clintons because they're not who we're stuck with now.
No, but
You're right.
But the reason I made that point was about you. I was making that point about you because of the narcissism that is taking over society. People only hear what they want to hear. So they're listening to you saying that and telling themselves, oh, she's a liberal. Oh, she's a socialist. Oh, she went out and voted Clinton. No, stop.
People that don't know my body of work. Yeah. They don't have any idea that I've been covering presidents since Bill Clinton. I cover them all the same, but I have never had to cover anything like this. And I don't want to talk anymore about the Clintons, the Obamas, the Bushes.
They're not around.
I cover all of them every day for 20 years. If I include radio, it's 21 years. But people that don't know my body of work, don't know where I'm coming from, don't know what I'm about, they just look at the latest thing and I'm the bad guy. And that's okay because I just chalk it up to the fact that they don't know me. They've never followed my work. They've never supported my work. How would they know what I've done?
Well, they wouldn't. The system is pushing us collectively into tiny, tiny, tiny boxes where we seek out validation of what we believe. So you will have people who listen to this show. I've got to admit this. There are listeners of mine who only listen because they agree with me. That's a negative thing to do that.
But it makes it a safe space for them.
It does. We've had this out before, me and you, but they should also listen to a conservative channel. Listen to everything. Don't be an identitarian. I always say that, and again, I'm not trying to be Mother Teresa here, But don't just take my take on it. And if you do that, then you won't melt down when you hear somebody legitimately criticising the Donald Trump administration. You know, it's important. By the way, I absolutely take on board what you said there. Maybe I should take a leaf out of your book. There's no point talking about the Clintons anymore in terms of US politics anyway. But there is a lot of point in talking about the crimes of the Clintons involved in terms of things like child trafficking and disappearing people, because that's still going on.
Absolutely. And you don't think that Trump and company have always been best friends with the Clinton. People don't understand what the bull crap they give us. They're against each other. That's just theater for the lemmings. All right. They're all in bed together. You know, they all partied together. You know what I mean?
Do you remember the morning after the election? Do you remember the morning after the election result when Trump went on 60 Minutes or I can't remember, whatever? So what about the special prosecutor, Donald? He's only been president for 24 hours. And he said, I don't want to hurt them. They're good people. They're good people.
They went to each other's weddings. Who knows? They probably, you know, look, there's a lot of evil they do. You know, and they, look, it was like me watching George Bush's funeral and seeing all the hypocrites there and knowing what a criminal he was. And how everybody was making him out to be a saint. He was this great president, blah, blah, blah. His son with the crocodile tears, the, you know, Cheney, the architect of 9/11, sitting there like he actually gave a crap. The criminals in this country continue to walk freely among us.
They do.
And no one does anything about it because they all have something to hide.
The tragedy for Trump support, we'll leave Trump alone and we'll take another direction for the last few minutes. My final word on Trump is the big tragedy for those who followed him. I felt sorry for those who followed him during the campaign because he was saying things that, now you and I knew better, of course.
Of course. Listen, Trump is 3 years older than me and I grew up in New York at the same time.
So you know who he is. But they didn't. And when he was saying things like, we knew, but when he was saying things to America, things like, you know, we're going to stop intervening and interfering overseas. We're going to stop all that and all that. These were things that we could have supported if we didn't know better. And there must be a real vacuum. I mean, people must be sick now as they realise that everything that the man said he would do, all the things that I could have supported if I didn't know better, they must be sick to their stomachs that
none of them. He still has a 36% approval rate. So, they, you know, I guess they haven't lost enough yet. Maybe when they lose their food stamps February 1st, it'll hit home. You know, people believed he was going to reopen 9/11. I said, what are you, stupid? That's never going to happen.
Never.
And I mean, people I used to respect, I thought they would trust a journalist, you know, and they still defend him. So, you know, I had to just cut ties with people like that. And I said, you're going to ruin your entire body of work by defending this guy. But they didn't care. You know, I don't know if they were mesmerized by him, if they thought they had a chance of banging Melania. I don't know what the deal was. Trump doesn't even have a chance of banging his wife. But
not these days, it wouldn't appear, no.
No, but to me, you know, everybody put so much hope and faith in this guy. Oh, he's going to release the JFK files. He didn't. I mean, people really don't understand. Don't say you understand the way government cover-up and conspiracy works and then fall for the bull crap, because it's all bull crap.
It's all bull crap. Maria Heller is our guest live from Arizona. What a place that is. I'd love to visit Arizona. I've only ever been on the
Come
East Coast.
Anytime,
I know you'd make me very welcome. I'd love to do it out there. Well, do you know what now? Yeah, we'll look into that. It's Maria, MERIA.net. That's where you can find more about Maria if you haven't before. So we're going to finish up on this one then. It's great when you're presenting, isn't it? You can dictate what's talked about. Here's one for you. I'm going to get you mad before the show is over. Is there a war on masculinity?
A war on masculinity.
Is there an elite war on masculinity? Look at the Gillette.
No, but I bemoan loss of masculinity in America.
Right.
And men don't know how to identify themselves anymore, and that's sad.
Why?
I mean, when I have to go up to a young man in a gym and compliment him on how masculine he is, that's how bad it is.
Explain.
Quite a hunk, I'll tell you that. He was all hairy legs and everything. And I was like, wow, you're like the most masculine man I've seen in about 15 years.
I hope he asked you for a coffee.
Well, he was a little young, so I gave him a break.
Young schmung.
He was smiling from ear to ear.
Young schmung. Right, the reason I asked that question, you've got the Gillette ad telling men that, you know, there's a lot of things that men should be ashamed of collectively. It came out of the Me Too movement, and some men, and I'm hearing this from academic, you know, UK academics, professors in UK academia are saying that there is a trend towards trying to kind of to emasculate men, to make men more feminine, to make men more less men, you know, through these campaigns that you can't do this and you shouldn't say that, and there's no such thing as locker room banter and all of that.
Well, it's all mind programming. I mean, it's all we are subjected to from the minute we're born. But I think that it's really hard for a man to identify himself today, you know. I'm not talking about the incels or toxic masculinity. That's a totally different thing.
That's what I was asking you about. So tell me about toxic masculinity. Is that nonsense?
Well, I mean, today they arrested another young white man in America because he's one of these incels. And he was on a goal to just go out and kill as many girls as he could because he can't get a date. You know, in my day, that was because you were a nerd or unattractive.
Right.
But now, if you can't get laid, I guess the thing is go out on a killing spree.
Well, that's mad to me. Can I ask you, you can reach across the pond with your special powers and punch me in the face if you want. But I'm inclined to take stories like that with a massive pinch of salt, to be honest. You know, some kid going on Facebook saying, I couldn't get a date, so...
But there's a whole group. I mean, they've got Facebook groups, gangs, groups. I mean, I think it's too many drugs in the food, too many drugs in the water. You know, when I talk about chemtrails, everybody jumps down my throat. They don't even question the drugs falling on us and the nanobots from the sky. And I think all the warped TV, whatnot, people don't know how to identify themselves anymore. And the truth of the matter is, why do they need to? Why can't you just be you?
Well, here's
one
for you.
Whatever that is, just be you.
Just be yourself. Here's one for you. Maybe some of these young lads can't get a date because they've been completely, as you've just described very well, they've been completely destroyed by external influences so that they don't know how to be comfortable in the presence of a member of the opposite sex.
Well, how many young men today grow up with a father? Where's their example? Where's their moral leadership? Where's the President of the United States as a moral example for young men? You see the men in this country now imitating Trump, whether it's at a game, whether it's at a protest, whatever. So they don't have any heroes. They don't have anybody to look up to. It's not like in the 60s when we had tons of heroes. So they, you know, you have that as a part of the problem. Now, the other side is there's a good part to it, too, because men need to learn to be more in touch and more in balance and balance out the male and the female energy.
Right.
So on a spiritual level, that's important to become a more sensitive, emotional, caring person, whether you're a man or a woman. So, you know, again, this is another one of those hot button issues that keeps us fighting and arguing amongst each other.
That's right. It's identity politics. It's brilliant. I totally agree with you. I'm not sure I go along with men need to learn how to be more in touch with their feminine side. I think men are all right the way we are.
Well, you know, I can already tell that you are, okay? I can already tell that you're in touch and in balance with your male and female energy. My men friends are. I couldn't be with one of the other extremes, you know? And that's really the key. It's a spiritual key. It's the truth of the matter is we all need to be in balance, male and female. We need to be in balance with the best of both sides to us. But that's, you know, that's a show for another day.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'd like to explore that a bit more. Yeah, I would see myself, to be honest.
And just so everybody knows, from what I understand, once you leave this planet, there is no sex. You neither male nor female. So you might as well get over it now.
Well, you've just ruined the rest of my life now by saying that. Because
you'll always be cute, though, Richie.
Yes, because my idea of heaven was that kind of suicide bomber's vision of heaven.
It wasn't 100 virgins.
Well, at least 100 virgins. No, I'm a proper Irishman. I don't want 100 virgins. I want 150-year-old experienced women. What's this virgin
Listen,
nonsense?
I'll share something with you. My father told me when he married my mother, she was a virgin. And I guess my father was a bit of a playboy before that. He was drop dead handsome. But he said, I only had one virgin in my life, and I hope to never have one again.
Fantastic.
So I often think of that when these men talk about their 100 virgins on the other side.
Absolutely.
I'm like, good luck.
Good luck with that one, yeah. No, give me an experienced lady.
Listen, to all your listeners, keep your sense of humor, okay? This world is crazy, but you don't have to be. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with Richie. You can choose to make your day happy every day. And if you want to get filled in on what's going on, you know where to find us. But I'm not here anymore. We're looking to argue with anybody because that's not my job. I don't really care what anybody believes. I just bring out the news the way I see it. You know, I'm from New York. I'm Italian. I'm a woman. Yeah, I'm going to get pretty wild and testy. And then it's done. Once my show is done, the rest of my day opens up for me to be happy.
It's a brilliant approach. It's honest. You know, I've always said your work is shot through with integrity. That's not kissing your arse. It's what I believe. That doesn't mean that every time I listen to the Maria Heller show that I say, oh yeah, Maria is right there. I don't, no more than you would listening to this show.
Absolutely
or any other
not.
Show.
I don't agree. I expect anybody to agree with me. My only job is to make you think.
Your job?
But that thinking leads you to do some investigation on your own. I did my job.
Absolutely. And if you're reporting something as you truly see it, with honesty and with integrity, you're a winner all day long, because ultimately what's right and what's wrong in so many areas is subjective. In other areas, it's not. In other areas, it's pretty simple what's right and what's wrong. But on matters of morals and spirituality, it's objective. It can be subjective. That doesn't matter. As long as you believe what it is that you say and what you're doing, as you always have done, it's compelling to listen to, and I will always recommend it. You know, a lot, obviously, people who listen to this program are aware of you. You've been making programs like this completely independent for far longer than I have, and they're well aware of who Maria Heller is. So we're just about up on time today.
And I didn't have to punch you in the face.
No, and I could feel something, though. I could feel you were trying to do something. I said something might have moved in the room. But
I'm not as violent as I used to be when I was younger.
Well, you know, this Italian New York woman thing, that scares the bejesus out of me, to be honest. So, look, we will undoubtedly speak again, if not in late February, a month from now, very early March anyway. And as
love
usual,
it. I'd like to get you back on my show, too.
Well, thanks. It'd be an honour. Nobody asked me to do anything.
Get you back on. I'm booked for February, but I'll get you back on in March.
Marvellous. I love that. It's maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net, the fabulous Maria Heller, live from Arizona. Maria, have a fantastic Thursday and weekend, and we'll catch up again soon. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Take care, Rich.
Bye for now. The brilliant Maria Heller, live on the line from her home in Arizona. Check her out if you haven't done before. Particularly, as I said, I'm trying to drive people towards listening to things, listening to people that they might not agree with all the time or some of the time. Or, you know, or often challenge yourself, you know. Your only concern when somebody is broadcasting is, or should be, does that person mean what it is they're saying? Do they believe it? Or are they working for an agenda? Are they being paid by somebody to say something or do something which is a bit sinister? Or are they giving it to you as they see it? That's all I care about. I don't care after that whether they're right wing or left wing or in the middle. They believe what they're saying, good enough for me, even if I disagree with it. That's my big thing for 2019. I'm not trying to drive my audience away from this programme. Listen to stuff that you would maybe not like sometimes. There's no harm in that, no harm in that. Now, I did mention I'm going to be back with you tomorrow for a news roundup, an extended roundup of the week's news tomorrow. A bit of fun as well. Going to make it a bit of fun, a bit light-hearted. I think that will be around 2 p.m. However, it might be closer to 3 p.m. UK time tomorrow afternoon, right? I'll let you know anyway on Twitter. Through, if not later on, I'll let you know on Twitter in the morning. And I might post something on richieallen.co.uk as well. This is in lieu of my unplanned absence on Monday when I was called away. Monday afternoon. So we'll have a news roundup tomorrow. We'll have a chat, you and I. We'll have a few laughs. We'll have a bit of music. We'll have some really interesting bits and pieces from the mainstream news networks as well to play for you. And we'll do that for Friday. That's tomorrow, Friday. There was something else. There's always something else, but I can't figure out exactly what it was. Something on my mind. But I'm struggling hard now. There was something I really wanted to say. But I suppose coming back on tomorrow, I can always say it tomorrow as well, anyway, because I will be on with you tomorrow. Right, so I'm going to leave it there for today. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave you and love you. Thanks to Gerard McNamara for coming on in the first hour. Very, very interesting man. Crimesofbritain.com is a very interesting website. Check it out. And as you heard just now, it's always a pleasure to have Maria Heller on the programme. It's been ages since Maria was on. Tonic to have her on. Great stuff. Check her out, maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. If you're new to her work, have a listen. It's not dull. It's always interesting. It's controversial. It's sometimes very funny. It's an Italian, New York, a New York Italian American woman shooting from the hip about the big issues of the day, often covering the stories we cover here with great colour and great enthusiasm. Check out Maria Heller. Going to finish up this Thursday with some, that was loud, with Oasis and a song called Champagne Supernova. That closes out Thursday's Richie Allen Show. So keep an eye on Twitter tomorrow. Should be around 3 p.m. Let's just say it's 3 p.m. tomorrow UK time for a roundup of the week's news. Have a great rest of your Thursday evening. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves and one another. It's bye for me. Bye now.